My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Welcome in to the latest edition of the Character Concerns podcast. My name is Chris Unoser. I am joined, as always, by the illustrious Jay Binkley, our football expert here at 610 Sports Radio. And right now we are, it's funny because we're obviously going to talk a lot of college today. We're going to get into this, the big betting scandal, the gambling scandal that's been happening up in the state of Iowa.
Yeah, Iowa's got some issues.
Iowa's got some, and you know what? I'm willing to bet that we're going to see more schools get into trouble like this.
No, they will.
We're going to talk about NIL and how you've got the government getting involved here lately with trying to control it. And we're also going to preview the edge rusher position for the 2024 class in the NFL draft. People to watch out for in the 2023 season. But right now, we are actually currently sitting here waiting for Williams Nwaneri, depends on where you look at, but he's either number one or number three overall in this year's draft, in this year's recruiting class. Well, next year's recruiting class. He is an edge rusher. He goes to Lee Summit North. I've had the privilege of seeing this kid play in person before. Last year, I went to a game between Lee Summit North and Staley. Went there because one of my little cousins was actually playing for Staley at the time. And so had an opportunity to see him, and man, like whoever gets his services is a real talent, is going to get in a real talent here, five-star talent. There have been four schools that have been linked to him. There's Mizzou, local school here. There's Oklahoma, there's Tennessee, and there's Georgia. Those are the four schools that have been linked to him at the very top end. So got some options here. You're talking about basically three SEC schools and one soon-to-be SEC school that he's being linked to. So this will be interesting here. This would be a huge win for Mizzou. Mizzou right now, recruiting-wise, is not doing great. They are, I think, last time I checked, they were 60th in the nation as far as their 2024 recruiting class goes. They could really gain some ground here by going out and nabbing a five-star here in Nwaneri.
Yeah, pick six out of seven teams in their division, the SEC, in the preseason poll. But all that could change. It could change quickly.
It could all change. I mean, and not only, and obviously we know this, for as big as this recruitment could be for whoever school gets him, with the transfer portal being the way it is, these kids a lot of times will commit one place, go there for a year, and then they change their mind and transfer somewhere else. So this doesn't mean that he's ever going to play for whichever school he commits to. This could change on a dime. He could very well change his mind, go somewhere else. So
he could switch it if Drinkwitz for some reason.
Yeah, you know, he could change. He could change before he signs, because we see that all the time.
Anyway, he's at the transfer portal after a year too.
So. Exactly. So nothing is set in stone here, but It is a big win for whatever school gets his services.
But which would be the second one for Mizzou.
Exactly, yeah.
Since Dorial Green-Beckham having the number one recruit in the nation.
DGB. And then they also got...
Luther Burden.
Luther Burden. Was it 2 years ago? They got Luther Burden.
As high as these guys are. But
no, not at all. But yeah, this would be a huge victory for Drink. Last year's recruiting class wasn't quite as well. This past year's recruiting class wasn't quite at the level that the 22 class was. So this would be a great way for him to salvage that, because I think he might be on the hot seat this year. So yeah, if it happens live, if it happens as we're recording, we will update you on that. But I want to get into this college football betting issue. You've had multiple players who have played for Iowa and Iowa State who have been caught, who've been investigated for betting on games, many of them using the accounts set up by family members, friends, to mom and dad, to bet on their team's game. Not just betting on games in general, betting on their team's games. And now this is starting to become the NCAA's worst nightmare. Like, with all of the NCAA has fought tooth and nail to ensure that there is no blemish as on their name as far as the integrity of their sport. If you remember back in the 90s, they were very, very antagonistic towards UNLV because UNLV was very good. UNLV had a lot of accusations of giving out improper benefits to recruits. And so there were some question marks about the legality of their teams and whatnot as far as players being eligible. And it's one of the reasons why the NCAA very much hammered that university. And now you've got an issue where legalized gambling is causing problems with integrity in college sports. You just had the announcement over the weekend that Penn Gaming, the company that was running Barstool Sportsbook, they separated themselves from Barstool and now are going to be running ESPN's sportsbook, ESPN Bet, as they're getting into the game now. And there's reports that their people are going to have to like discourage their own personalities from being
betting. They want to sham say, oh, exactly. Going to go second or third pick. So, yeah, because it could sweeten the line.
So how should the NCAA, with all of this money being tossed in on gambling, how should the NCAA stop players from betting on games?
I don't know. I mean, this is something that honestly they could have been doing the whole time, right? I mean, there was no restrictions.
Right, right.
I mean, there's offshore accounts and anything anybody else does or in states that have it legal. I think we're up to 33 or 34 states have legalized it at this point. It just makes it easier.
Right.
If you're within those, or like how many kids go across the border in whatever state they're in, you know, to lay some bets and see where you're going. Here's the thing with college athletics is I guess you would be okay with doing other sports. The NFL is kind of iffy because you could have a former teammate or something from last year or last season that you know well on the NFL team.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you monitor it, especially when family gets involved or aunts and uncles placing bets for you or a friend or girlfriend. Now, that's risky, though, because that's only something they have to hold over you at that point as far as them placing bets with you. Because how many times is that going to come back, Chris? A scolded lover.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden say, well, I'm going to say about I took pictures of all these bets I placed for you.
Yeah.
It's fine for me to do, but not fine for you to do. So which direction are you going to go? Who knows where this is going to go? But they have their hands full with nil. And I always thought that college football at some point would need to, it's getting out of control because with nil, which is fine. Nil's fine. Pay these athletes. We've always said that and they should get their money. But they don't want the wild, wild west either coming in, because I remember Jordy Nelson interviewed him a couple years ago about this situation, and he had talked to Kansas State, you know, football players about it. But you got to be careful. And with Miami giving all that money, the Hurricanes giving all that money to players, you've got to keep track of it, the money you're getting, because there is taxes due on things that you have. And I don't know how that works out. I mean, It's complicated for pro athletes to have to pay taxes in every city. Like Kansas City, you play here, it's a 1% earnings tax. Even for the people in PR from other teams that come in and play the Chiefs, you've got to pay it. But they always need like a separate thing. because the IRS will come for their checks. They will come for their money at some point and take a look at it. And you don't want this to be a problem in college athletics. Like, you don't want guys getting behind before they get started, before you get that contract and things like this. But I don't know what you do, Chris. Obviously, these casinos have some smart people with them. They know who's placing bets. The one thing you don't want to see is games being thrown because of it. Like, you've seen old guys, you know, performance that have laid bets. Did you bet on the win or lose? Like, you never want to bet on your team to lose. Like, you don't want to see them bet on their team, period. But if they bet on it to win, you don't like it. But as a bettor, you're kind of like, okay, well, this guy wanted us to win. So he's going to, you know, put forth the effort to win. But when that player bets on you to lose, then you're like, okay, wait a second here. Do I know that you fumbled it? I've watched college football back. I remember a game a long time ago. And don't want to say who the player was and all that, but it was a great player. And looking to go to the next level, I was like, I don't like the way he's playing. I don't like the way the fumbles. Like, I have no idea what happened or what could happen. But sometimes you see bizarre fumbles out of nowhere. And you sometimes, it shouldn't be in the back of your mind, but it is. But that's the real thing. If you bet on your team, especially to lose. You never want to bet on them, period, if it's your team. But betting on them to lose, that's where you lose the integrity of the sport.
So I'm sometimes I can be a little bit conspiratorial in nature. So I understand where you're coming from about seeing a player kind of play out of character, and your mind just wanders to, I wonder if he's on the take here. So I can understand that. I do believe that throughout the history of college sports and professional sports, there probably have been players who have either placed bets or have been paid to throw games. I mean, we obviously know that was one of the things with like the Black Sox scandal, where those players were paid to blow games. They were paid to throw the World Series, and it was actually very common in baseball at the time. It's the reason why they knew that the World Series was thrown that year, because a lot of baseball games back then were being thrown, and so everyone knew it. They knew what it looked like, and it was very obvious that's what it was. One thing I will say, though, I think the only way you can really, I don't think you can ever stop this, because I think there is always going to be people who have a financial motivation to not play their best or to intentionally throw a game, because it's easier to bet on your team losing or yourself like contributing to losing than it is to bet on your team to win. It's just much easier. It's much more predictable because you can control that part. You can't really control if you win or not as much as you can control if you lose. Here's what I will say, though, about that. The only way you can really try to curb this as much as possible is if you are severe, you're harsh with your punishment for people who are caught doing this. Like, if I were the NFL and I had a player who was active, because I think Calvin Ridley, I think you can make an exception for because he was not playing at the time. He was injured. But let's say that, you know, in the case of, like, wasn't there like an Iowa quarterback who was betting on the unders for his team's games? Now, imagine if you've got players who we know are betting against their team, betting on their team to lose, or betting on statistics to that they can have some measure of control over, like a starting.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valenti, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Quarterback betting the under on the total for the game, banned for life. I don't think you can have that person. That's immediately strip your eligibility. You're gone for life. I think that's the only way you could really curb that sort of behavior, because at the end of the day, you want to make sure that you protect the integrity of your sport, because the government's going to get involved in that. Because there's antitrust. There's a lot, you know, whenever there is any sort of money being put on that and you have some measure of control there, the government's going to get involved, because they're already heavily involved with sports betting anyways. And all of these books are very, very compliant when it comes to the government, because they heavily scrutinize.
I mean, they have to deal with the NFL and pro athletes and everything.
Here's all the time.
Here's the official rules that came out June 30th, 2023. The new guidelines adopted this week by Division I Legislative Committee calls for a permanent collegiate ban if any player is found to have bet on their games, influenced the outcome of those games, bets on other sports at their school, so you can't even bet on like a different sport.
Even other ones,
knowingly provided information to someone engaged in sports betting. So if you call, so I remember, was it Franchione, who was it? I don't know the specific. At Texas A&M, and he had like a sheet for their alumni or whatever, like who's injured and who's not. Well, that's a symbol for bettors.
Oh, yeah.
Where, like, if you're playing for a team and you're like, hey, Chris, I don't think player X is playing this week.
Or he's really hurt, man.
He's playing, but he's hurt. He can't throw the football
exactly,
in practice.
Yeah.
I don't know about us playing such and such this week. Here's the other one. NCAA student athletes are prohibited from wagering not only on popular collegiate sports such as football and basketball, but also on collegiate sports like synchronized swimming, as well as professional leagues such as the NBA, NFL, NHL.
If you're betting MLB on synchronized swimming, you've got a problem.
Well, it's like betting on preseason football.
Yeah, exactly. You got a problem if you're betting on preseason football. I think that's how you do it. And I think they're going to have to, these guys are going to have to get weeded out. And they're going to have to be made an example of. And I'm generally not a proponent for, like, severe punishment.
Yeah.
Because I think that, like, I do believe in second chances for a lot of people. But, like, this is an issue that the NCAA cannot afford to go soft on. This is not, they can't be forgiving in this instance. Because the government is looking for reasons to try and make an example out of a sports book for allowing corrupt bets out there. And that's just something they're going to have to deal with. None of these books want to deal with that. And none of these leagues want to deal with that, because it damages their reputation. So I'm actually all for them being as severe as they need to be in this situation, because it is a very touchy issue. And with so much money being out there on the line, and with football and basketball in general being sports that are taken incredibly serious by the general public, you cannot have the results of games being tossed out there. Especially
you don't want to wonder. Like I mentioned to you, and it's not a particular game or anything.
Right.
If you've seen something in the past, even like 10 years ago, and you've seen just this egregious interception or fumble, and you're like, how the hell did that happen?
Yeah, you know,
we've had gambling scandals in college athletics, both in basketball and football.
Yeah, and not only that, but we've also, there's like naturally, there are a lot of people in our society who are conspiratorial in nature, and whenever their team loses, a lot of times they will default to cheating. There was some sort of cheating. I mean, I see it all the time. I have this hobby where I like to go on like the SB Nation websites for opposing teams that the Chiefs play in the playoffs. And I like to look at the message board during the game as the Chiefs beat them in the playoffs and their hopes for a championship disappear. And at the end of the game, it is always, oh, the refs, the NFL wants the Chiefs to win. It's like that. It's like that every game, every year. It's been like that for years.
Well, that's the other thing, too. the refs.
Yeah. And like, especially if the refs. Because
you know
thing.
That's coming out.
Oh, yeah.
Eventually, someone's getting busted.
Someone's getting busted for sure. That's absolutely going to happen. We already saw
Tim
with Tim
Donaghy.
Donaghy
situation in college football.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah. The Tim Donaghy situation.
Their friends, or their uncle, their brother, whatever, made a bet. Mom, dad, whatever.
Or they made a bet. Because in that case, they were making bets. Like Tim Donaghy was making bets.
And they directly influenced the game.
Exactly. And they were able to shave points. They were able to add points. And that was really, really big for the result.
I mean,
of
these
the
guys get themselves in debt to gambling, and hey, you want to make amends? You want to make this up? Here you go.
Exactly. And so that's the reason why they got to be really, really strict with the punishments for this. Because if you're not strict about it, if you allow this stuff to continue, and you're kind of giving people second chances, I just don't think you can trust people in that situation. So I definitely think they got to be swift and they got to be strict about the punishments here. Another issue that's kind of popped up in college, NIL. It has become very, very prevalent around here. It has been a big determining factor in where players go now. I've seen it. You've seen it. Players making decisions on where they're going to go to school, transferring or committing to a school based on NIL. I mean, one of the biggest examples we saw was with Kansas basketball this year, where was it Hunter Dickinson was a big man for Michigan. He entered the transfer portal, transferred to KU this year for this coming season. And basically it was about NIL. Like, I think he said the max offer he got from Michigan was for $600,000, and he got a seven-figure offer from KU, thus he makes the transfer. Now you have the government getting involved. You've got members of the U.S. Congress introducing bills in an attempt to try and create some sort of limits to NIL. Should there be any limits to name, image, and likeness payments for these athletes? Because like a lot of the prominent coaches, the big name coaches are speaking out against. Nick Saban's talked about this in a negative light. So is Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin the last few weeks has been really vocal about this.
How? Is the first question. How? I think once the box is open, how would you do it? How would you do it? I'm curious, how would you do it? Report it? What if it's non-reported?
So here's
like, what would be your suggestions?
I believe the way you do it is you have to have some sort of centralized reporting system out there that allows you to essentially monitor the transactions that happen between these schools, where there's official offers. There's not just, because like, you remember the Jalen Rashada thing that happened with Florida earlier this year, where Rashada was basically signed a 4-year, $13 million deal to go play for Florida. And then right before he signed, on early signing day in December, he was supposed to be given a fee up front, a portion of that up front. He didn't get it. And so it kind of held off his signing with Florida by an hour. He eventually signed, but then actually asked to be let out of his letter of intent because they had not made any payments on it. And it turns out the backer that had made that had basically was supposed to front the money for it got cold feet and decided not to pay for that.
Well, you know how the rule was set up. Like, you can't go to a school because you're getting so much money, right?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be after you sign.
Yeah.
That was the deal, like, after you signed. Then some states have a deal where you can start getting the money before you actually go and play, but you're playing for a state school. So it's different. But the NCAA's not changed that, did they? They didn't change that rule, did they? Where you can't, if you're offered $1 million to go to one school and $500,000 for other, like, you can't be offered the money before you go, can you?
Yeah.
Even though I think it happens.
Yeah. I mean, I'm seeing now Williams Nawaneri. They didn't actually put the announcement up here, but it looks like he committed to Mizzou. So,
oh, he did commit to Mizzou.
Looks like he committed to Mizzou. So Drake just got himself a top five, either one or three, depending on where you're going. It appears that Nawaneri is going to be headed to Mizzou.
What a huge get!
Yeah, that's a real big get for him. It certainly is a big move to help out their recruiting class for sure. Because again, they were not ranked very highly. So again, if that is true, yeah, he.
I didn't think they got others receiving votes, did they, in the AP today?
You said what?
I don't remember seeing him in the others receiving votes. Kansas had like 10.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of question marks about the Mizzou team this year. So that's what it looks like. But yeah, I mean, in this situation here, if you have a centralized platform where groups can be registered with the NCAA to make official offers, they can make those offers in that portal. And then with that portal there, you can track and ensure, like you know how NFL teams or NBA teams, whenever they like agree to a contract with the player, that money is immediately taken from the team and put into an escrow account where it cannot be touched except whenever that money is paid out to the player, or if the team, or if like money goes back to the team, then it goes from that account to the team's account. But it goes into an escrow account, and then that way the backer can't just pull the money later. They have to agree, okay, if I'm going to make an offer, I got to put this money into that account. And then that way you don't have a Jaden Rashada situation happen. That's probably your best way of handling this. But I honestly don't think there needs to be controls over who can offer what.
It's just so tough, you know, to say you might strike a deal or whatever, and they're not going to pay you till you sign, whatever. But my biggest thing too is, when guys have a deal and they transfer, they hit the portal. Like if it's such and such dealership locally that offers you a Porsche or whatever, and you're driving the car because you're going to State University, and then you transfer, evidently, obviously you give the car back or whatever. But what if it's not that? What if it's money given to players? I always thought this might help too, the bowl games and stuff, where guys that stay and play because they got money coming in for staying and playing in those games.
Yeah.
But eventually, how many of these deals... Because we haven't seen the ramifications of this yet. It hadn't been enough time. But they will have 30 for 30s and stuff like that eventually. But they'll, okay, I mean, you're a company paying for an athlete. They're going to want their cash back.
Yeah.
If you didn't fulfill your deal.
Right. And I think that's also got to be a part of it too. Like, let's say you didn't fulfill your commitment. That money from that escrow immediately gets paid back. That's like a prorated amount based on whatever wasn't fulfilled in the commitment. So if you only are there for one of the 4 years, then whatever is left over based on the agreement gets paid back to whoever funded that money. I think that's the best way you do it. But I don't think there should be any issues with other schools recruiting players, as long as you do it in an official manner and you do it during a certain period. So it can't be like, halfway through the season, a player gets benched, and then all of a sudden another school starts approaching them about making an offer halfway through. It has to be only during an official period. And certainly that's not going to be completely 100% followed.
Yeah.
But I do think that that's the best way you handle that situation there. So yeah, there is a lot of nuances to this whole discussion here. I said, I just don't want it to get to a point where you've got the top coaches trying to limit how much movement these players can have when you have these coaches really not having very much in the way of limits of movement too. Because if you got a guy like Lane Kiffin's been one of the most vocal opponents of this and saying there needs to be more controls over this. Lane Kiffin is also a guy who has just basically upped and left his school very quickly and left his players high and dry. When he was at Tennessee, he was there for 1 year and he was promising them the world. And then next thing you know, the next year he's off down to L.A. to go coach for the Trojans.
It's tough when you're sitting in living rooms looking at mom and dad and making promises that you can't deliver on. It just changes this whole sport. And here's the one thing about it. I think as traditional college football fans like myself and you, these are extraneous things that you don't like keeping up with. I mean, here's the thing. I go every year, been doing it forever, in June, to Barnes & Noble. And get all the college football previews.
Oh, yeah, you do. Yeah.
Phil Steele. I mean,
you
I love all,
you go to Barnes & Noble for that?
Because they usually have about everything. It doesn't matter which bookstore, but that's the one I typically go to.
You go to the actual physical bookstore.
It's the only time I walk in there.
Yeah.
It's the only time I go.
I was about to say, it doesn't seem like your kind of place.
No, it's the only time I go in there, obviously, is to get college football magazines because they got so many. And I go in there, and like now, it's a roadmap, man. Finding out where everybody, Sam Hartman's now at Notre Dame. He's the Notre Dame starting left with Wake Forest here before us. Bo Nix and Michael Penning. You know these guys are transferred out there, but some of these guys, you're looking and go, oh, I forgot about that. I forgot about that transfer that went on there. So just kind of reacclimating with nil. The portal. The portal's caused me more confusion than anything because I really don't want to know what guys are getting paid and not in their inner workings, and nor do I really care how much they're getting paid. You can get whatever you want. But with the coaches now and how basically the portal is free agency, because it used to be all these coaches that are really worried about the job, they'd go out and get like 12 recruits that were JUCO. Like, that's one way to get your program back fast.
Or graduate transfers, too.
But now it's the portal, maybe the graduate transfers. Now it's the portal, man. That's become free agency. And to me, there's the smallest margin between pro coach and college coach we've ever seen.
Yeah.
I was talking to this about people. I was like, man, think about it, though. Like, I remember Bobby Bowden, we used to come on, you know, when talking. He said he'd worry about midnight phone calls. You worry about, because what a player do? What they do? How much do they take money or what? Worry about the midnight phone calls.
Or them getting in trouble or whatever.
But those things you worked on, scholarships are a series of one-year scholarships, kind of. And got players that have their scholarships pulled. And you name it.
Exactly.
The coach had the power. Like Urban Meyer, when he was Ohio State, he had the power. Well, what happens now? Transfer portal. It didn't matter. Guys can now transfer in your conference. Before they couldn't, there was a big no-no. Like,
teams would have to sign off.
Like, we'll let you off, but you're not going to the SEC.
Right.
Like, we'll let you out of your scholarship at Alabama, but you're not going to the SEC. We don't want to see you with Georgia.
The coaches would have to agree to allow them to move.
Like, we're fine with you going to the Big 12 or the
Pac-12,
whatever.
You just can't go to these schools.
Just don't go to these schools. They put certain schools there that we didn't, like Clemson, you wouldn't go to South Carolina or whatever. You wouldn't, or Kansas State, you name it, with certain restrictions. But all that power's gone. Now players can just leave. And you understand why coaches do it. It's free. The sport has changed. That's why we're going to see, well, look at conference realignment. That's totally changed the game. But we're going to see the meaningless bowl games gone, even though I do like them. I say the word meaningless, but don't take it to heart because I just do like cracking open a beer, man, some nachos on December 15th, whatever it is, and flip it on and watching college football game.
Yeah, I mean, because
I still enjoy that stuff.
They are meaningless.
Well, they are meaningless, but I enjoy it.
They are good, yeah.
It's like preseason football. Actually, I like those games better than preseason football.
They are better.
And it's not even close.
They're usually better than
preseason. Even though a lot of the guys aren't playing anymore, which has changed things again, Chris.
Yeah. My big thing is, like, you remember Manny Diaz, who was defensive coordinator at Miami.
Yep.
Then he took the Temple head coaching job. And then 2 weeks later, right, like literally like a few days after early signing day in December, Mark Richt steps down as head coach of Miami.
Yep.
And then he, I think this was like 4 days after early signing day, he had been on the job for 11 days total, got 18 players to sign early, and then he quit his job at Temple and then took the head coaching job at Miami. Didn't last that long. I think he got fired after three years.
It was quick. It didn't matter. It's gone.
But, like, think about it.
These guys aren't even staying and getting their mortgage.
He wasn't even in Philadelphia where Temple is. He was doing all that work still in Miami. And when he found out about Mark Richt retiring because of his health, that's when he took that job. And it's like, think about it. You got 18 kids to sign early to go play at Temple. And you did all that recruiting. I don't know how many of those guys he flipped or whatnot, or were uncommitted and then committed there and then signed. But think about it. Put in work, got these kids to go play there. We know that these kids commit to the coach, not the school. And now the guy that they committed to dipped just a few days after they signed.
Well, there's some that will say, no, it's the program because they grew up in the state of Ohio. They're going to Ohio State because they hate Michigan, whatever. You go for the coach because you want to know who's going to get you the next level.
Exactly.
You know, it's like Caleb Williams moving around the country. Why did he do that? Why did he go with Lincoln Riley? Because he likes Lincoln Riley because he's going to showcase him offensively and what to do. And a lot of guys, they go because of the coach. And you know what? It used to be, well, if you were kind of stuck at the school with the transfer portal, you can follow the coach at least that time. So you commit to him, you can follow him wherever they go.
Yeah, I mean, if that were the case, then you would not, whenever you see movement from team to team, they wouldn't be able to take players.
If they like you.
If they like you, they're going to follow you. So
it just changed. It sucks a little bit, but I'm glad the playoffs are expanding. And I think they need to expand a little more. I think 16 is kind of where they need to be.
16 is like the perfect
number. When you're going to get the power like this, but then they say, well, how many games do you play? Well, get used to it because the NFL, you play 17 regular season games. So, and here's the thing. Remember the old excuse? When they started the BCS, they're going to miss so much class time.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you got more than half the NCAA schools playing bowl games, which means they're practicing into finals, after finals, and you name it. They're still doing
it. Most of these kids are missing class time anyways.
But here's the thing. You don't miss class. Like, a lot of times you're playing your conference.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I get these conference games now. We're like, going to be across the country.
Well, yeah, now you're going to fly across the country.
But beforehand, okay, you play half your games at home, which you don't leave anywhere. The other ones, you leave on Friday afternoon, so they don't miss any class. You take your class in the morning on Friday, and you leave. College basketball? Hell, rowing. You miss more. You miss right. baseball. I mean, you miss more class than any other sport, but the big money maker, which is football, and these guys miss no class.
Some of them do, like, because they still have the Wednesday and the Thursday and Friday games. But even if they do, like, you can take online classes, you can make up work.
But it's still less.
So it's like, it doesn't, like, the whole missing class thing doesn't matter.
And those are close games, too, usually. Mac in the middle of the country. And Western Michigan going to Central Michigan and playing.
Not only that, but, like, some of these schools have been cheating anyways with the classes, and they've been hooking their students up.
The bottom line
up,
is,
so
it college matter. Football players miss less class than any other sport.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, that part. So getting to the Edge preview for 2024. Right now, you have it's not quite as many guys projected to be potential first rounders as, like, receiver or quarterback, like we've previewed the last couple weeks. But there's really, like, two schools that have two potential first round edge rushers. One of those is Ohio State. Ohio State's got this kid named JT Tuimoloau.
This guy
might be the best edge rusher in this draft class.
That guy is. Yeah. I think definitely top three because Jared Verse, I think, of Florida State.
This is a guy,
the number one.
This is a name you're not going to be able to say. Like,
Jared,
right.
I know JT.
Call him JT.
Tuimoloau. Yeah, Dallas Turner. They're going to let him loose. He wasn't rushing nearly as much with Will Anderson there.
Yeah, he's going to be real good.
He's going to be turned loose. But Jared Verse,
Florida State. Yep.
Love Jared Verse, I think, will be the first edge taken in this year's class.
I'm kind of leaning towards Tuimoloau, but I do think Verse has a very good chance. It was funny. He was draft eligible this past year, but did not enter the draft because he was a guy that I was seeing on way too early's last year. And so I was watching him early in the season and I wasn't super impressed with him. But I think that this year, a little bit more time under his belt. I think he might have had some injury issues.
You know, Ohio State on the other side's got Jack Sawyer. And they're going to let him loose this year.
Yes.
He'll begin to the quarterback. So you have two great edge rushers at Ohio State. And Jack Sawyer, a lot of times people will have anywhere from 20-something, 23rd to second round.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen Jack Sawyer go all over the place. But, again, two dominant edge rushers at Ohio State this year.
Washington's
got a
couple.
Find themselves, as far as being top 10, I think JT, a great chance to be top 10. Jared Verse, I think, is for sure top 10.
Me too.
Talent. And I think Dallas Turner will end up being top five, maybe at some point. We don't know. Dallas Turner, we'll see how he plays.
We'll see, yeah.
But they only scheme up an edge rusher, and Dallas Turner is now the Will Anderson.
Yeah, it's kind of like how they do a running backs too. Like, usually they have a very good running back there. Like, this year we saw Jahmyr Gibbs get overdrafted by the Lions this year, going 12th overall. I think there's a very good chance that Dallas Turner is able to kind of play his way up. Part of it being the creed of all these really good edge rushers we've seen come out of Alabama. Obviously, Will Anderson Jr. Just got drafted 3rd overall by the Texans earlier this year. But Washington's got a couple of guys too. I think you definitely want to watch out for
the Pac-12. Actually,
well, the former is now the Pac-4.
It'll it's be still Pac-12.
Pac-12 this week. This year.
But yeah, you talk about Braylon Trice out of Washington.
And then I'll say the name. Zion Tupuola-Fetui.
I call him ZTF.
Yeah, ZT. Yeah, ZTF.
In Latu at UCLA.
Yes. Yeah. Latu. Yeah. Yeah. That's another guy.
And also Brandon Dorius at Oregon. So you got all these Pac-12 guys.
And then there's a kid in the, besides the Ohio State guy, Sawyer and Tuimoloau. There's also Penn State guy, Chop Robinson. Great name. That's another guy to watch for. And then in the ACC and for Virginia, you've got Chico Bennett Jr., who is another guy I've seen as a potential first-round edge rusher. There's a lot of guys to watch out for. Certainly Ohio State, Washington, Alabama, Florida State. Those are going to be the schools you really want to watch out for. I'm going to be I don't think the Chiefs are going to be in it for an edge rusher this year unless it's a disaster. But certainly I wouldn't put it past them if there was a guy falling out of this group or somewhere else.
Yeah.
And they were like a Joshua Kando type, really athletic type. I would not be shocked if the Chiefs, like, early third day, like we've seen them do before with Kando and Thompson.
No more of that redshirting, man.
Go with a guy like
but
that.
But even in Michigan, today the AP poll came out. Is recording this on Monday.
Yeah.
The new AP, but Michigan was second. which, by the way, didn't look like Harbaugh is going to miss any games for the team.
Yeah, I didn't think so either.
But Chris Jenkins and Josiah Stewart, two studs for Michigan going as well. But here's the one thing, Chris, is I think it is top-heavy when you look at the Jared versus and when you look at JT and guys like
Jack Sawyer,
Dallas Turner, and those guys. It is top-heavy, but I think we've seen this shift the last 3 years. You know, I love that stat on this program when we talk about edge rushers. You know, 1 through 16, man, that's where a predominant number of them went the last 2 years. Except we've started to see more guys like Karloftis mold at the end of the first round and getting guys in the second round. We've seen a seismic shift now when you can get rushers. Because honestly, I look at the top 20 every year, like you know, and they are predominantly 1 through 16, 1 through 18, 1 through... And now it's starting to switch out to maybe 1 through 27, 1 through 28... is where you see a lot of the top 20 sackers go. But we're seeing a shift now of some of the edge rushers where you can get quality guys towards the end. And I think it matters on the quarterback class, which this year there could be 6 to 9 quarterbacks in the first round or the wide receivers. Because last year we was down on wide receivers. I was higher on them than I think most
a lot of people were, yeah.
But this wide receiver class, like I said,
it's pretty great.
They're going to end up being good. They're going to end up being good, a lot of these guys. And everybody's still worried about Quentin Johnston, by the way.
Yeah, of course they are. I mean,
he got a touchdown, but he dropped some others.
Yeah. I mean, look, we kind of knew that there was some question marks about him. Yeah, it is very much like
that.
I'm
still on the Jalen Hyatt train.
Yeah. Supposedly he's been doing well in camp.
But regardless, Chris, with these edges, I think it's switching to, if you wanted an edge, can you get a top 5, top 6 edge drafting at 32?
Yeah.
Maybe. The Felix might be there. You know, you might get that many people, because they're going to have first-round grades on. Well, this year was different. It's about 16 guys or first-round grades. The year before, it was about 20 guys, first-round grades, as far as what teams thought of grades. You're going to start seeing a lot of fringe one- or second-round talent still available at 32. If that's the direction a team that was picking at the end of the first round, like the Chiefs have, picking at the end of the first round, the depth is there, I think, for edge. You're not getting the top-quality one unless you get down the top 10. But the Karloftis is the world, I believe. This is kind of a Karloftis style draft with a lot of these guys.
I kind of feel like what you're starting to see a shift with teams kind of going with a committee approach as far as their pass rush goes, instead of like, okay, we need this one guy who's going to go get, you know, 12, 15 sacks a season. Now it's like, okay, well, let's have like that one guy who can get double digit sacks, and then let's have like 2 or 3 guys that we know can get you somewhere in that 6 to 8, usually like right about the 8-ish mark, and then have some other guys who are rotational and they can get you like 4 or 5. And that, like, the Chiefs did that last year. Chris Jones, 15 and a half sacks. After that, it was, you had like 4 sacks from Carlos Dunlap. You got 6 sacks from George Karloftis. You had like, I think, was it 4.5 from Frank Clark? Mike Dana had
Bolton
like 5
guy,
sacks.
I think, what, 2?
Bolton got you a couple.
Leo Chanel.
Yeah, like that's, they kind of, it was like a committee approach where
don't
you
forget
just
the
had,
secondary.
You had a bunch of contenders there. And certainly, yeah, there's going to be guys there in the secondary that'll contribute, that contributed there. I mean, L'Jarius Sneed, Trent McDuffie contributed a little bit. I kind of feel like that's where teams are going to go with there's being so much of these rotations. Even at the collegiate level, it's a rotation game now. It's not, we got the same D-line we're going to play the entire game. It's, well, we've got our A line and then our B line, and we'll switch guys out. And I think that that's going to be the situation at the NFL too, where teams are going to kind of want to have a nice, like probably like 4 edge rushers that they can think could go potentially 5+, and probably at least 1 or 2 interior guys they think can go 5+. And that's going to be their rotation. And they're going to want some depth and some versatility.
But the Chiefs get their sacks from everywhere. Just like this last preseason. I know it's preseason, but they were blitzing all different directions.
Shamari Connor got a sack.
That was my guy, Shamari Connor.
You did like him a lot, yeah.
He was my favorite pick. I said after the draft, yeah. I said this is my favorite pick.
He was definitely the Chiefs kind of guy, yeah.
It's 4 phaser on special teams. Play all those. Not only that, he was in the nickel. He started the nickel. He started the corner. He started safety.
Yeah, he played everywhere.
Led him in sacks in 2000. Again, this was a L'Jarius Sneed type pick to me.
Yeah, me too.
He can shut down your tight end and things like that. He gets the first sack for the Kansas City Chiefs Shamari Connor.
Yeah, so I think that is where, like, nowadays, it's like, that's why you're starting to see the value of these edge rushers.
Versatility.
Push back, because they're versatile.
Spags they can move will rush from everywhere, man. He's setting the trend. He'll, like you said, he'll blitz from the secondary. L'Jarius Sneed, guys like that with Connor. I mean, he wants guys that could, Tyrann Mathieu was the key to that, because he
very
led
much,
all defensive backs and quarterback pressure since he came in the league when the Chiefs went out and signed him.
So
he knows how to get to the quarterback.
So pivoting here to our final topic, Chiefs Sunday played against the New Orleans Saints down in the Big Easy. They lost 26-24. We're leading by 10. We're trailing by 10 points. Made a comeback in the second half. Got a lead. Then obviously that turnover at the end of the game led to a game-winning field goal for the Saints. A lot of people freaking out about the starting defense not really doing great. The 4th-and-1 play where you have Blake Bell doing the tight end sneak. That
to
they've
me,
been
that
doing
was the only play that mattered in the whole game.
Yeah, that
like,
was
literally
that was a bad call. It was. I mean, that should be the last time they ever run
it's
that
Colin
play.
Colin Saunders over there.
He knew it, too. He's calling it out. That should be the last time they run that play. Who from that game, as far as rookies go, was the most impressive for you?
People are going to say Nico. Because of Nico
he made a really good catch in that game.
He's a Fresno State guy that comes in here, and there's some undrafted guys. But again, we've seen this before. Like, Fountain. Darius Fountain.
Yeah, Darius Fountain.
But here's the one thing, and I always caution people that'll say, hey, man, did you see so-and-so? I'm like, listen, who were they playing against? And don't say New Orleans Saint. Remember the old excuse when they started the BCS? They're going to miss so much class time.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you got more than half the NCAA schools playing bowl games, which means they're practicing into finals, after finals, and you name it. They're still doing
Most of these kids are missing class time anyways.
But here's the thing. You don't miss class. Like, a lot of times you're playing your conference.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I get these conference games now. We're like, going to be across the country.
Well, yeah, now you're going to fly across the country.
But beforehand, okay, you play half your games at home, which you don't leave anywhere. The other ones, you leave on Friday afternoon, so they don't miss any class. You take your classes in the morning on Friday, and you leave. College basketball, hell, rowing, you miss more. You miss baseball. I mean, you miss more class than any other sport but the big money maker, which is football, and these guys miss no class.
Some of them do, like, because they still have the Wednesday and the Thursday and Friday games. But even if they do, like, you can take online classes, you can make up work.
But it's still less.
So it's like, it does, like, the whole missing class thing doesn't matter.
And those are close games, too, usually. Mac in the middle of the country.
And
Michigan going to Central Michigan and playing.
Not only that, but, like, some of these schools have been cheating anyways with the classes, and they've been hooking
the
their
bottom
students
line
up.
Is,
so
it college matter. Football players miss less class than any other sport.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, that part. So getting to the edge preview for 2024, right now you have, it's not quite as many guys projected to be potential first-rounders as, like, receiver or quarterback, like we've previewed the last couple weeks. But there's really, like, two schools that have two potential first-round edge rushers. One of those is Ohio State. Ohio State's got this kid named JT Tuimoloau.
This guy
might be the best edge rusher in this draft class.
That guy is. Yeah. I think definitely top three, because Jared Verse, I think, of Florida State.
This is
the number one.
This is a name you're not going to be able to say. Right.
Jared, I know JT.
Call him JT.
Tuimoloau. Yeah, Dallas Turner. Now, they're going to let him loose. He wasn't rushing nearly as much with Will Anderson
there. He's going to be real good.
He's going to be turned loose. But Jared Verse,
Florida State. Yep.
Loved you. Jared Verse, I think, will be the first edge taken in this year's class.
I'm kind of leaning towards Tuimoloau, but I do think Verse has a very good chance. It was funny. He was draft eligible this past year, but did not enter the draft, because he was a guy that I was seeing on way too early's last year. And so I was watching him early in the season, and I wasn't super impressed with him. But I think that this year, a little bit more time under his belt. I think he might have had some injury issues.
You know, Ohio State on the other side's got Jack Sawyer. And they're going to let him loose this year.
Yes.
He'll be getting to the quarterback. So you have two great edge rushers at Ohio State. And Jack Sawyer, a lot of times people will have anywhere from 20-something, 23rd to second round.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen Jack Sawyer go all over the place. But again, two dominant edge rushers at Ohio State this year.
Washington's
got
a couple.
Find themselves, as far as being top 10, I think JT, a great chance to be top 10. Jared Verse, I think, is for sure top 10.
Me too.
Talent. And I think Dallas Turner will end up being top five maybe at some point. We don't know. We'll like see. Dallas Turner, we'll see how he plays.
We'll see, yeah.
But they always scheme up an edge rusher, and Dallas Turner is now the Will Anderson.
Yeah, he's kind of it's kind of like how they do a running backs too. Like usually they have a very good running back there. Like this year we saw Jahmyr Gibbs get overdrafted by the Lions this year, going 12th overall. I think there's a very good chance that Dallas Turner is able to kind of play his way up. Part of it being the creed of all these really good edge rushers we've seen come out of Alabama. Obviously, Will Anderson Jr. Just got drafted 3rd overall by the Texans earlier this year. But Washington's got a couple of guys too. I think you definitely want to watch out for
the Pac-12. Actually,
well, the former is now the Pac-4.
It'll be still Pac-12.
Pac-12 this year. This year.
But yeah, you talk about Braylon Trice out of Washington.
And then I'll say the name. Zion Tupuola-Fetui.
I call him ZTF.
Yeah, ZT. Yeah, ZTF.
In Latu at UCLA.
Yes. Latu. Yeah. Yeah. That's another guy.
And also Brandon Dorius at Oregon. So you got all these Pac-12 guys.
And then there's a kid in the, besides the Ohio State guy, Sawyer and Tui Moloau. There's also Penn State guy, Chop Robinson. Great name. That's another guy to watch for. And then in the ACC and for Virginia, you've got Chico Bennett Jr., who is another guy I've seen as a potential first-round edge rusher. There's a lot of guys to watch out for. Certainly Ohio State, Washington, Alabama, Florida State. Those are going to be the schools you really want to watch out for. I'm going to be I don't think the Chiefs are going to be in it for an edge rusher this year unless it's a disaster. But certainly I wouldn't put it past them if there was a guy falling out of this group or somewhere else.
Yeah.
And they were like a Joshua Kando type, really athletic type. I would not be shocked if the Chiefs, like early third day, like we've seen them do before with Kando and Thompson.
No more of that redshirting, man.
Go with a guy like
but
that.
But even in Michigan, today the AP poll came out. Is recording this on Monday.
Yeah.
The new AP, but Michigan was second, which by the way, didn't look like Harbaugh is going to miss any games for the team.
Yeah, I didn't think so either.
But Chris Jenkins and Josiah Stewart, two studs for Michigan going as well. But here's the one thing, Chris, is I think it is top heavy when you look at the Jared versus and when you look at JT and guys like
Jack Sawyer,
Dallas Turner, and those guys, it is top heavy. But I think we've seen this shift the last 3 years. You know, I love that stat on this program when we talk about edge rushers. You know, 1 through 16, man, that's where a predominant number of them went the last 2 years. Except we've started to see more guys like Karloftis mold at the end of the first round and getting guys in the second round. We've seen a seismic shift now when you can get rushers. Because honestly, I look at the top 20 every year, like you know, and they are predominantly 1 through 16, 1 through 18, 1 through, and now it's starting to switch out to maybe 1 through 27, 1 through 28 is where you see a lot of the top 20 sackers go. But we're seeing a shift now of some of the edge rushers where you can get quality guys towards the end. And I think it matters on the quarterback class, which this year there could be 6 to 9 quarterbacks in the first round or the wide receivers. Because last year we was down on wide receivers. I was higher on them than I think. Most
a lot of people were, yeah.
But this wide receiver class, like I said,
it's pretty great.
They're going to end up being good. They're going to end up being good, a lot of these guys. And everybody's still worried about Quentin Johnston, by the way.
Yeah, of course they are. I mean,
he got a touchdown, but he dropped some others.
Yeah. I mean, look, we kind of knew that there was some question marks about him. Yeah, it is very much like
I'm
that.
I'm still on the Jalen Hyatt train.
Yeah. Supposedly he's been doing well in camp. We'll see.
Regardless, Chris, with these edges, I think it's switching to, if you wanted an edge, can you get a top 5, top 6 edge drafting at 32?
Yeah.
Maybe. The Felix might be there. You know, you might get that many people because they're going to have first-round grades on – well, this year was different. It's about 16 guys or first-round grades. The year before, it was about 20 guys, first-round grades, as far as what teams thought of grades. You're going to start seeing a lot of fringe one- or second-round talent still available at 32. If that's the direction a team that was picking at the end of the first round, like the Chiefs have – picking at the end of the first round, the depth is there, I think, for edge. You're not getting the top quality one unless you get down the top 10, but the Karloftis is the world. I believe this is kind of a Karloftis style draft with a lot of these guys.
I kind of feel like what you're starting to see a shift with teams kind of going with a committee approach as far as their pass rush goes, instead of like, okay, we need this one guy who's going to go get, you know, 12, 15 sacks a season. Now it's like, okay, well, let's have like that one guy who can get double digit sacks, and then let's have like 2 or 3 guys that we know can get you somewhere in that 6 to 8, usually like right about the 8-ish mark, and then have some other guys who are rotational and they can get you like 4 or 5. And that, like, the Chiefs did that last year. Chris Jones, 15 and a half sacks. After that, it was, you had like 4 sacks from Carlos Dunlap. You got 6 sacks from George Karloftis. You had like, I think, was it 4.5 from Frank Clark? Mike Dana had
Bolton
like 5 sacks.
I think, what, 2?
Bolton got you a couple.
Leo Chanel.
Yeah, like that's, they kind of, it was like a committee approach where,
and don't,
you just
the
had,
secondary.
You had a bunch of contenders there. And certainly, yeah, there's going to be guys there in the secondary that'll contribute, that contributed there. I mean, L'Jarius Sneed, Trent McDuffie contributed a little bit. I kind of feel like that's where teams are going to go, with there's being so much of these rotations. Even at the collegiate level, it's a rotation game now. It's not, we got the same D-line, we're going to play the entire game. It's, well, we've got our A line and then our B line, and we'll switch guys out. And I think that that's going to be the situation at the NFL too, where teams are going to kind of want to have a nice, like, probably like 4 edge rushers that they can think could go potentially 5+, and probably at least 1 or 2 interior guys they think can go 5+. And that's going to be their rotation. And they're going to want some depth and some versatility.
But the Chiefs get their sacks from everywhere. Just like this last preseason. I know it's preseason, but they were blitzing all different directions.
Shamari Connor got a sack.
That was my guy, Shamari Connor.
You did like him a lot. Yeah.
He was my favorite pick. I said after the draft, yeah, I said this is my favorite
pick. He was definitely the Chiefs kind of guy. Yeah.
It's 4-phaser on special teams. Play all those. Not only that, he was in the nickel. He started the nickel. He started the corner. He started safety.
Yeah, he played everywhere.
Led him in sacks in 2000. Again, this was a L'Jarius Sneed type pick to me.
Yeah, me too.
He can shut down your tight end and things like that. He gets the first sack for the Kansas City Chiefs, Shamari Connor.
Yeah, so I think that is where, like, nowadays, it's like, that's why you're starting to see the value, yep, of these edge rushers.
Versatility.
Push back, because they're versatile.
Spags, they can move will rush from everywhere, man. He said the trend. He'll, like you said, he'll blitz from the secondary. L'Jarius Sneed, guys like that, with Connor. I mean, he wants guys that could. Tyrann Mathieu was the key to that, because he
very led much, yeah,
all defensive backs and quarterback pressure since he came in the league when the Chiefs went out and signed him.
So
he knows how to get to the quarterback.
So pivoting here to our final topic, Chiefs Sunday played against the New Orleans Saints down in the Big Easy. They lost 26-24. We're trailing by 10 points, made a comeback in the second half, got a lead. Then obviously that turnover at the end of the game led to a game-winning field goal for the Saints. A lot of people freaking out about the starting defense not really doing great. The 4th-and-1 play where you have Blake Bell doing the tight end sneak.
That was the only play that mattered in the whole game.
Yeah, that was a bad call. That should be the last time they ever run that play.
It's Colin Saunders over there.
He knew it, too. He's calling it out. That should be the last time they run that play. Who from that game, as far as rookies go, was the most impressive for you?
People are going to say Nico. Because he made
a really good catch in that game.
Yeah. Fresno State guy that comes in here, and there's some undrafted guys. But again, we've seen this before. Fountain. Darius Fountain.
Yeah, Darius Fountain.
But
yeah,
here's the one thing, and I always caution people that'll say, hey, man, did you see so-and-so? I'm like, listen, who were they playing against? And don't say New Orleans Saints. I'm talking about future USFL guys, future XFL guys, future guys selling for State Farm.
Future special teams guys.
Yeah. Future guys selling for State Farms or
car dealerships.
Or working at Costco.
Yeah.
Because that's who you're playing against. Okay, do it against the ones. Like Rashee Rice got some time with the ones. I like that. I like Rashee Rice. I like the fact he's getting open. Like, I love that toughness that he brings. Like, I really like that. But again, who are you playing? How, when, what time of the game are you in, and who are you playing against? Just like when I see these videos of guys getting these touchdown catches at training camp, I'm like, okay, who did they catch it against? Like, who do they go up and get the catch against? Justin Ross looked good. I'll admit it. Justin Ross looked really good.
Yeah.
Because you got to be able, and Richie James, man, I come away more, I think, from him than anybody else. And it's not a rookie, because the guy had a breakout year.
He's been in the league for a while.
But he showed me a lot. But as far as rookies for this team, I'm going to say Shamari Connor on defense and Rashee Rice. I like what he did. And I know that Remigio and all these guys and Justin Ross and all that. But as far as rookies, Rashee Rice, to me, showcased So I don't know what you thought about Rashee Rice. I just like the way he ran his routes. I don't like the separation he got.
He looked good. The two guys that really jumped out to me, though, one, obviously, Tremari Connor. Looked really good.
He's smart. Give me a jersey.
We said this when he got drafted. It was like, this is a Spags type of DJ.
That's right.
He could play in the slot. He could play safety. He could play corner. He could blitz. He's a very willing tackler in the run game. Like, he does everything that they like in a safety, and he kind of comes off to me as the replacement for Justin Reed in a year or two.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I very much think that Connor is their kind of guy. So I was really impressed. I was very happy that they were willing to show him off.
He'll
as a blitzer.
He'll get snaps the ones this year. He will.
I think so, too.
He'll get snaps the ones.
I think very much, especially if he's able to, like, work his way up as that third safety instead of Mike Edwards.
Yeah.
Absolutely, they'll put him out there if he shows he can do it. The other guy, though, that I was impressed by was Felix. Felix was one. I think he was tied or had the most snaps of the game. He was generating pressure coming off the edge to a point where they had to chip him.
Yeah, his pressure changed. Yes. It was the second, third.
Yeah, like, he's a guy I think has earned some reps with the ones. Obviously, we won't know what he's going to do until he actually is out there with the ones and showing what he can do. He has gotten reps in camp already with the ones, and he's kind of traded victories with Donovan Smith, which is either a really good sign for Felix or a really bad sign for Donovan Smith.
He did lead the way, 46%.
Yeah, because he's gonna. I mean, obviously, Donovan Smith looks like he's going to be the starting left tackle for the team. So if he's got a rookie out here beating him in one-on-ones like that pretty consistently, you know, back and forth, I kind of wonder if that's a bad sign for him. But I will say this. The fact that Felix has come in and he's kind of been a very quick learner and worked his way up to getting a lot of reps out there.
Off the injury.
Yeah, shaking off that injury, which held him out for much of the offseason. I'm really interested to see what his growth is. And when we get to week one, how much is he going to play against the Lions? Because Noah Minihue out there, so you expect that he'll... I mean, obviously, Daniel will probably end up being the starter off the edge.
And then Chris Jones, who knows when he signs.
Yeah. But
and how rusty is he going to be?
Right, and I think Danny Shelton's probably played his way into some more playing time at a three-tech. But I'm really interested to see what they do with that other edge spot. And I think if Felix keeps working his way up and grinding, he could see some pretty significant time early. And I think that would be a really good sign for the
Chiefs. On passing downs.
Passing downs, more so than that. But I think there's some value there. So I'm really excited about what he could bring to the table if he continues to grind. The fact that he was out there for so long, the fact that he was able to generate some pressure, and the fact that, you know, Spags has had a lot of great things to say about him is a very good sign for him in the future. I think he's going to be a bit of a project, but he has shown throughout his football career that he can pick things up and he can
be Carl Loftus and just, you know, kind of see the light bulb around week 7, week 8.
That'd be great. That'd be perfect.
Yeah.
You know, if he could do that, and then on top of that, prove to be versatile like he was in college, where he's rushing inside, rushing outside, that'd be great. So that is it for this week's edition of the Character Concerns podcast. We will be back here next week. We will again preview another position to watch out for in this year's draft class during this year's college football season. On top of that, we will continue to bring you the top news from college football. There might be some more realignment stories out here. Cal and Stanford, reportedly, there are 4 schools in ACC that have said they would vote against those schools joining the conference. So,
which had Notre Dame get a vote? Exactly. They have basketball.
Exactly.
There.
Exactly. There's a lot of craziness going on right now. If there's any changes with the NIL or transfer portal, we'll obviously talk about that as well. There's a lot of things to cover here in the world of college football, and certainly we'll keep you previewed on next year's draft class. So for Jay Binkley, I'm Kristen Osero. We thank you for listening. We'll catch you guys next week.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valenti, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.